The following classic Compassion Radio interview featuring Dr. Norm Nelson comes from our vast archives and originally aired in March of 2010.
Coming up on today's Compassion Radio.
I feel a great sense of indebtedness, knowing my experience is not all that unique. Christians have suffered catastrophically through history.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio. The unthinkable happens. Tragedy strikes. You're left stunned, confused, even desperate. What do you do? Hello and welcome to Compassion Radio, where the rubber meets the road in the service of God's beloved children all over the world. Today's guest is a first-rate professor, theologian, author, and father. He's also faced one of life's most devastating challenges, and he'll tell you all about it today. More importantly, he's discovered that God has a plan, even in tragedy. There is hope, purpose, and even joy. And some of God's plans are breathtaking in their scope. Today's interview is a powerful, very personal look at one man's battle and triumph of faith. Here's Norm.
Jerry Sitzer, professor of theology at Whitworth University in Spokane, Washington. Jerry, welcome to Compassion Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Norm.
One of the things that professors do, and for a while I was in that role myself, actually, and one of the things that you do, in addition to teaching, is to publish. Professors write scholarly books, they write articles, they write papers that are presented in scholarly conferences and all of that sort of thing. But Jerry, while you've done all of that, you've also written a book that is deeply personal. And I'd like to start off our conversation today with reference to that. The book is called A Grace Disguised. Could you just tell us about the experience that is behind that book?
Well, it actually was not my idea to write the book, Norm. It was really the idea of a community of friends of which I'm a part. They walked with me through an experience that was excruciatingly hard for me and my three children. After 3 or 4 years, they actually talked with me as a group and said, Jerry, we think you need to go and print. And I said, no, I refused. And they said, some things you do not because you want to, but because it's for the common good. Now, they were referring to an experience I had many years ago now. It's in the fall of 1991. My wife, Linda, was a homeschooler, and we had 4 very young children at the time, I think ages 8, 6, 4, and 2. She had just finished a homeschooling unit on Native American culture, so the 6 of us, and my mother was visiting us for the weekend, so the 7 of us piled into our minivan and went to a Native American powwow some distance away, a couple hours away, had dinner with the tribal leaders, participated in the powwow. It was really a wonderful evening. But on the way home, we were hit by a drunk driver going 85 miles an hour head-on. In fact, his car literally flipped over ours and cartwheeled down the highway. When the dust settled, my mother was killed and my wife, Linda, and one of my children, my 4-year-old, Dinah Jane. The wife of the driver was also killed, and she was 9 months pregnant. So really 5 people were killed in the accident. Well, needless to say, it was just catastrophic for me. I was able to haul my kids out of the car and get pulses and other things like that, but realized fairly soon that the 3 people who did in fact die were going to die. Then in the weeks and months and really years to come, I had to figure out how to make life work for 3 very traumatized children and a father who was suddenly thrust into a role that he did not choose and never could even imagine at the time.
You know, Jerry, as you described this, and it did happen back in 1991, I believe. Is that right?
That's correct.
I need to confess to you that I really feel like I'm treading on holy ground in discussing experience like this with you. And I feel like I have to tread lightly with a spirit of reverence in regard to a story like this, even though it's been a long time ago. This is jumping over so much to ask a question like this. But how did you get from that catastrophic experience to where you are now with your faith, with your psyche intact?
My psyche he is intact, although my children would sometimes raise questions.
They
about
would.
That I want you to know.
All of us have suffered, but that story, that event, is just so catastrophic that it's hard for me to identify with it. I've had nothing like that happen in my life.
When I wrote the book, first draft was all theology. Mm. And again, that same community of friends read it, liked it, said it was very insightful, it was very good, but they strongly urged me to write my own story in. And when I decided to do that, that was a very difficult decision for me to make. I decided at the same time to include a chapter that I had not anticipated putting in, and it was called Whose Loss is Worse?
Mm.
And in that chapter, I argue that all what I call irreversible losses are bad, only bad in different ways. Now, I admit our experience is unusual. It was very violent. It was very traumatic. On the other hand, Norm, my wife loved me with all her heart.
Mm-hmm.
She loved her children. I was pretty grounded in the faith at the age of 41. And even though our journey has been hard, we've had a fairly smooth pathway from there to here and from that period to this period of our lives. I mean, I had to really put my shoulder to the plow, so to speak. But my kids are thriving. They're just wonderful people. Mm. They all have genuine faith. They're talented kids. That we didn't have to deal with any permanent kinds of injuries. The line between the living and the dead was very clear. On that particular chapter, I reflect on other kinds of irreversible losses, which, as much as this might surprise you, I cannot comprehend.
Mm.
The messiness of a divorce, for example, a terminal illness, a bankruptcy, mental health issues. These things are completely beyond my experience. I cannot comprehend the kind of slow drip of loss that some people experience, sometimes over a lifetime. Let's say you have a child and that child turns out to be schizophrenic, for example, or severely autistic, or a marriage that gradually deteriorates and leaves in its wake brokenness from one generation to the next. I mean, these kinds of things, experiences are completely beyond my comprehension. So my experience was bad and traumatic, but it was clear, clean, and I was able, really within months, if not years, to get back on my feet, to roll up my sleeves and raise my kids. I was part of a really gracious and loving and supportive community. I had 20 years of decisions behind me of being a serious believer that really came in handy and provided stability for me. I don't mean to mitigate the significance and seriousness of my experience, but to provide a certain degree of perspective so I don't have this big badge I'm wearing on my chest that says, I am a big victim. I don't actually feel that way at all, Norm.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Let me just ask you two questions here, really, I guess, the flip side of each other. What did help in particular? You mentioned community. Obviously, that was so important. And that you really stressed that in the book. But what did not help?
I don't think I've ever been asked that question before. Very good, Norm. I commend you for that. Well, I would say what did not help is an attitude that whitewashes the experience too quickly.
Mm.
I think it's really important for Christians, when they go through some kind of loss or disaster, that they look at it for what it is and they name it for what it is. I think we're never going to get to the point of forgiveness or gratitude or redemption without first recognizing that there are things in life that are just plain bad. And we have to name them as that. And actually, as indulgent as this sounds, feel it. We have to get to the bottom of it. We've got to dare stare into the darkness of that experience until we come to the light. And I think well-meaning Christians in particular like to get to the light maybe a little too quickly and first need to be able to recognize the bad thing for the bad thing it is. I mean, Joseph really put it well when he said to his brothers, "You meant it for evil, God worked it out for good."
Yeah.
He did not whitewash the severity of their terrible deeds and the extreme difficulty and suffering that he had to endure for many years before he could see some kind of resolution and the hand of God's redemptive work in it. And I think what I did is I gave myself permission to look at this experience and say, this is really bad. Mm-hmm. And it was because of that, I really kept plunging into the darkness of the experience that in time allowed me to get to the light of a new day.
Jerry, I want to follow up on something that we were just talking about, and that had to do with naming things that are bad as bad, not denying all that. You mention in your book, which we are discussing right now, the book called A Grace Disguised, that you went through various stages of grief. I remember reading all those stages of grief, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, wrote that very popular book a number of years ago. Is there validity to that as you draw and look back on your own experience?
I would say some limited validity. That is to say, books like that tend to describe what, in fact, most people experience after they've gone through some kind of loss. I think what we need to do, though, Norm, is beware of turning a descriptive framework into a prescriptive one.
Mm.
A person will say, oh, gosh, I'm going through the anger stage right now or the denial stage. And here's why. First, we're not all wired the same way, and we're not going to go through an experience the same way either. Some people may keep circling around anger, for example, for a long time. That might be a theme they're going to have to deal with for the rest of their lives. Somebody else might be prone toward depression. Some may, quote, skip stages altogether. That's one concern, is when descriptive turns into prescriptive. Mm. The other thing is it gives us the false expectation that we're going to get through those stages, so to speak, and come out the other side in what is normally called recovery. Well, I guess I asked the question soon after the accident, what do you mean by recovery? I can't recover from this.
Mm.
I can't get back to something that I had or I felt before. In the process of my own journey, I had to realize that my definition of the good would have to change, for example. And instead of looking at stages or recovery, I began to see that the way set for me was to absorb the experience itself and make it a part of the landscape of my life. I actually had an image that really worked well for me. In this image, it was kind of a waking dream I had. There was this huge oak tree in our backyard, 100 years old, beautiful, fruitful, swings on it, picnics under it. It's a tree that I had grown up enjoying. Then it gets a disease and we have to cut it down. So I look out in my backyard and the oak tree is gone, all the memories, and instead there's just a big stump sitting there. That oak tree is gone. It's never going to return. But over time, I decide to go back there and re-landscape my backyard around the oak tree stump. I put in bushes, I put in lawn, I put in a bench. And so that oak tree stump is a reminder of something that's lost that will never be gotten again. But around that stump is a new life that can be planted. Now, I think that's what we can expect when we go through some kind of catastrophic loss.
Jerry Sitzer knows what it means to find strength in a time of trial. If you've ever been through that kind of loss that he's talking about, well, then you know. We'll be back with more of his powerful story in a moment. Join us as we bring the compassion of Jesus this month to the neediest places on earth. Just give us a call, 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Again, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're on the internet at CompassionRadio.com. Friends, we don't go unless you go with us. So give us a call today. And now back to the powerful story of our guest today, Jerry Sitzer.
That oak tree stump is a reminder of something that's lost that will never be gotten again. But around that stump is a new life that can be planted. Now, I think that's what we can expect when we go through some kind of catastrophic loss. We can't get back to what was before. We have to remember it, value it, mourn it. I think mourn it for the rest of our lives. And at the same time, do the kind of planting we need to do that affirms there's life still to be lived and it can be meaningful. Now, in my case, Norm, it's been raising my kids. I mean, that's one thing. There have been many other things, too, but that's one. It's been unusually meaningful for me. It's astonishing for me to be given this weighty responsibility and utter privilege of taking three children, 8, 6, and 2, utterly traumatized, and to pour my life into them. And they're just doing wonderfully in life. My oldest daughter's getting married this summer. My second born is going to Duke in graduate school. My youngest is at a Christian university and going to be studying in Jerusalem this fall. and they're invested in service, and they've got great communities of friends, and all have goals in life that are really meaningful. That was part of the story I had to live out in the wake of the tragedy we had experienced.
That is so good, Jerry. That is just so helpful. Explain the meaning of the title, A Grace Disguised. Grace is a gift, is it not?
And sometimes it's a gift that's given to us in ways that take a while to figure out and actually see. Not all gifts are obvious, Norm. And this experience I had was not an obvious gift. It seemed just the opposite. It seemed everything but a gift. But in time, it really has become a kind of gift. And even though I would never choose it and will always label it as a bad, as an evil thing, in the wake of it has come a very rich life. And I'm deeply grateful to God for that.
Jerry, we're moving now from a discussion of that just absolutely riveting book to a new book that you have written called Water from a Deep Well. And this is a book about, well, the subtitle is Christian Spirituality from Early Martyrs to Modern Missionaries. Is there a connection between A Grace Disguised and Water from a Deep Well?
Oh, there is very much so. I make my living teaching the history of Christianity and American religion. That's what I do from day to day with students. And one of the things that has given me a great deal of perspective is my knowledge of the history of the church and the unfolding nature of the Christian movement. It has given me this rich sense of belonging to a much larger community of faith than the people I know personally in my own place and in my own time. I identify very strongly, for example, with early martyrs or early missionaries or church leaders, and I feel a great sense of indebtedness knowing that I'm really rooted in a much larger community than simply my own. And they remind me that my experience is not all that unique. Christians have suffered catastrophically through history at some times. Think about what it must have been like for Christians to go through the Black Death in 1347. It continued on and off for 250 years, you know, the bubonic plague.
Right.
Between a quarter and a third of the population of Europe died in that plague. We have no categories for that. It is so far beyond our comprehension. And yet the church survived. Very few people know this. There were two plagues that swept through the Roman world in the second and third century, one in 165 AD and one in 250 AD, I believe. Scholars aren't sure of exact numbers, but they estimate as much as a quarter of the population of the Roman world might have died in each one. And we have enough information to know that Christians behaved with unusual heroism and charity during those two plagues. They buried the dead, they cared for the sick. They did things that the pagan world refused to do. And those are my brothers and sisters in the faith. And they give me a sense of belonging, a foundation upon which I can build my own life. I think about Christians who have chosen to suffer. Most of us spend our lives avoiding suffering at all costs until it jumps us, you know, like my experience when a car drove into my minivan and took three members of my family. Otherwise, our ideal life is to live in a gated community and have nice friends and attend a good church and make a good living and vacation in the summers with our kids, whom we hope are going to be smart and athletic and musical, and all get married and have three or four kids and live within a mile of us.
And we feel entitled to that, don't we?
And we do, or at least if we don't feel entitled, we have this strong longing for that kind of tidy, convenient life. And I'm reminded of the number of Christians who lived through history who have chosen. Now, this has not been imposed. They have chosen to set a course for their life that would mean suffering and loss. And it does something to me, Norm, and I tell their stories and I trace the history of Christianity through the lens of the spiritual life of these people.
Jerry, one of the items of focus for this Compassion Radio ministry is the persecuted church. And when you talk about the persecuted church, as you pointed out, you're talking about the entire history of the church. But one of the things that really has impressed me is how much of the New Testament and the earliest writings of the Christian movement have as their background suffering and persecution. We tend to forget about that, or if we ever knew it at all.
We do.
I think that as we read the New Testament, we are missing the significance of so much of what is being said there when we forget that.
Our eyes just gloss over those things because we don't have a context. We don't live in a context in which we can identify and comprehend the significance of the many, many texts in the New Testament that explore the themes of suffering and loss and sacrifice. And the same, obviously, would be true in the early Christian period. You know, Christians really didn't gain any kind of legal status till into the 4th century. For the first 250-plus years of its existence, it was largely, not always, but largely an illegal religion. And even today, as you know, there are Christians suffering persecution and execution around the whole world. Get this. A year ago, I got an email from a fledgling church community in Turkey where a very famous early Christian, Polycarp, was martyred. And they had just sent three missionaries from western Turkey, where Smyrna is, to eastern Turkey to plant a new church, and those three were martyred. It was fairly famous. When I got an email from the leaders of that church, who asked for permission to translate A Grace Disguised into Turkish. And all of a sudden, those two worlds of mine got connected.
Wow.
The book, A Grace Disguised, about loss, suffering, and my own interest in the history of the church. Here were believers who are alive today, who were writing to me about the martyrdom of three of their own members. Now, I felt almost embarrassed, Norm, frankly, that I had this experience imposed on me. And these three men who were martyred, in a sense, chose to embrace that kind of risk for their love for Christ.
Yeah, that's the background of the Christian movement throughout its history. And your book, in a sense, chronicles that, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Through the early Christian period, I focus on martyrdom, early Christian community, the desert fathers and mothers. I have chapters on medieval monasticism, on Eastern Orthodoxy and icons, which is a real stretch for most Protestant Christians. I don't justify or defend everything, but I try my best to explain it sympathetically. I have a chapter on medieval sacraments and then late medieval period Reformation, evangelicalism, pioneer missionaries, so on and so forth.
The book is published by InterVarsity Press, Water from a Deep Well. And I must say, as you've described it here so briefly, Jerry, you're a very good writer, and anyone who sits down with this will find their lives enriched as they begin to understand the deep well from which their own faith has been drawn as 21st century Christians. Jerry Sitzer, I wish we had hours to talk today.
It's been really a pleasure to talk with you, Norm. Thanks so much.
I understand that you've won a number of teaching awards at Whitworth. I can only say that your discussion of your experience back in 1991 and the two books that you've written here indicate to me that that's not a mistake.
Thanks.
Great to talk to you, Jerry.
Our thanks to Norm's special guest today, Jerry Sitzer, author and professor at Whitworth College, Spokane, Washington. His testimony and grounded faith have brought comfort to thousands and opened the doors for the gospel around the world. And we want you to help us do what Jerry's been talking about today. Will you join us in carrying the compassion of Jesus to those who have never heard of him?
My friend, there's nothing in either Christian radio or on secular radio like Compassion Radio. Just think about it. First-hand, on-site programming right from the war zones of Afghanistan and Iraq. From the capital city of Burma, speaking to Christian converts from Buddhism. From Gaza, where the Israeli military and Hamas just squared off. Believe it or not, from Natanz, where one of Iran's biggest nuclear reactors is located. And from other international hotspots, you'll hear a message of hope based on what the living Christ is doing in all of these places. And you'll also learn what you can do. But listen, my friend, since we are a 100% listener-supported program, I need you to stand with me financially today. If you haven't given before, make this the occasion to join in with our Compassion Corps.
And indeed, that is the voice of the one and only Reverend Dr. Norman Clark Nelson on this classic Compassion Radio broadcast that originally aired in March of 2010. It is most definitely what we would call a classic and a nice way to close out the week. By the way, in speaking of Norm, if you had not heard, our dear brother Norm left this earth on Monday, April 10th, and is now in glory with the Lord that he followed so fiercely his whole life. We miss him so, but we are also grateful that he's been released from the tremendous pain and mental struggle that he dealt with in the last months of his life. If you'd like to offer a word of remembrance or comfort for his wife, Cher, for Bram Floria, and the Compassion Radio team, please reach out to us. We would so appreciate hearing from you. Our phone number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. The mailing address, Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can always find us and reach out to us at CompassionRadio.com, CompassionRadio.com. Oh, and before we say goodbye for today, let me remind you that for a one-time love gift of $15 or more, we have a beautiful item that we'd like to get into your hands for all the moms in your life. It's a Mother's Day-themed devotional booklet. Get one for yourself and one for your mom, or your daughter and daughter-in-law, too. You can reach us by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or you can always find us online at CompassionRadio.com. I'm Jim Covernally. Have a wonderful, blessed day in the Lord. And we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.